Hanile Yilmaz, PhD.
So what inspired you to create your organization?
Oh, how long time do you have? So
Tons of time.
I was inspired from birth. I was born into a family of mental illness. My mother had a lot of mental illness that I became the observer of and the recipient of as well. And I came to, at the age of 10, to develop my own mental illness and start that journey of having eating disorders, lots of anxiety, depression, and various other challenges that I had to deal with. And that became really severe. And at 11 and 12, I was dealing with a lot of suicidal ideation. So my own personal story started from a young age, and that really came to shape my own journey. At the age of 18, I had to make a decision about what did I want to study? What do I want to do with my life? And I was still struggling with severe mental illness, but I was captivated by how people become who they are. Why did my mother become the way she is? Why did I become the way I am? What about my father? What about other family members? What about the people that go through terrible things and seem unaffected? Like, what is the difference? What does resilience really mean? You know, I had all these big questions. So that led me into psychology and neuroscience, where I spent over a decade doing research. I now have a PhD in neuroscience. I did a short postdoc at Harvard University, which led me to Boston, where I am today. But at the end of that academic journey, I also came to realize that I really wanted to have more of an impact on people rather than, you know, sitting in the university environment, working there, doing that research. Like, I wanted to go out and talk to people and bring all of this information out to them, because I came to realize that it played such a big role in my own recovery. And so that's really what led me to build Mind Blossom. And our whole purpose is to break that barrier between all of that knowledge you would get if you were to become a college or a PhD student in a fancy university, and then being somebody who's working in real life, a community center staff member or a teacher or a caregiver, that can really benefit from that knowledge.
So what was the process in getting all this information to share out?
Oh, I mean, like, the steps involved with doing so? Yeah. To be completely honest, I didn't really know what I was getting into. I had an overarching vision of what I wanted to do. And then I just started kind of taking each step in that direction. So I formed a nonprofit organization. I then started building a team. I'm lucky enough to have a really awesome network of people that also have that passion of supporting people in the real world. And then I started relying on my network, like, how can I get out and actually speak to people and talk to people and make sure that this is relevant? But then I realized, you know, in the beginning, and I think a lot of conversations right now, they surround around schools as like, oh, we should go to the schools, provide mental health support and whatever capacity that may be. And we were in that same boat where we were thinking, oh, we should go to the schools and we should provide mental health education. But what we also came to realize is that there's a lot of red tape, and schools are really difficult to get into for various reasons. They don't have the funding, the resources to even talk to you. They don't think that mental health education is important. There are various barriers. Everything is changing very swiftly. So we are ready to be there whenever a school wants us to be. But in that process, we realized that maybe the schools are not the place for us to be right now. And we started through different inlets. We started coming into the community centers. So now we're doing really cool and important work at the Boston Community Centers, where we are training their staff on mental health. We're providing them with the skills to understand, the skills to communicate, and the skills to support people, youth, children, around the topic of mental health. And we're expanding that now to New Haven, Connecticut, where we're actually running not just staff training, but also starting to help them set up a maternal program where we are providing mothers, new and expecting mothers, with that information about, like, what is postpartum depression? Where do you go and seek help? What are some evidence-based free resources that you can utilize to support yourself? And so we're really tapping into the community center world. It's funny, it kind of feels like it's a full circle for me, because I spent a lot of my time at a community center as a child. It was my space away from my home that wasn't a very positive place to be. So now going out and doing all of this work at community centers seems like a really fulfilling and meaningful task. So to answer your question, I'm backtracking a little bit, it's been a very organic route where it's been a lot about trying to understand what are the needs, who are ready for that support right now, and then we're providing it. And so we're providing support for anybody, but the community center is just kind of where we have our eyes set, simply because we realize there's a huge need and they've been overlooked by many other entities in the past.
How important is getting mental health education to kids so they, you know, it's more of an everyday thing than, you know, as an adult where you're not thinking like that every day?
Yeah, you're totally right. Like, the power of bringing it into the school system is that we can make it a part of their curriculum, just like they have health 101 and they're studying biology and they're doing physical exercise. Now we can go in and say, well, let's talk about what depression is. What are some of the signs? What does it mean to be happy or healthy? Or what is coping? How can we all learn how to cope better, which is something everybody can do? So that would be incredibly meaningful. And I really would love to contribute to that cause. I know many other organizations are too. Now, so to answer that question specifically, that is really important, but it's really difficult to get access. So another way that you can kind of get the same output is by training the staff members, or, you know, the teachers, the caregivers, the ones that are the role models and the supporters of these young kids. Because if I were to go into a classroom today, which I have done several times, yeah, sure, they trust me because of my credentials, right? I'm a neuroscientist by training. I have a PhD in that. It all sounds very fancy, but I am not their trusted teacher or their mother or their role model by any means yet. So I'm not necessarily the one they're going to trust and believe in the most. I would much rather empower the people that are actually the role models and the primary caregivers to these kiddos out there, and give them the skills to say, hey, this is really important, because we know the chances are much higher that then the kids and teenagers will be much more likely to actually absorb the information and really internalize it into their daily habits, so that when they go on in their lives and they are 30, 40, whatever, you know, like you and I, and they are thinking to themselves, oh man, like, I'm starting to feel those early warning signs, I know exactly what I'm going to do, right? And they're not even thinking about it. They're just doing it.
Well, I like that you brought up, you know, resources for the family, because I live with bipolar disorder, but it also affects my wife and kids every day. So how important is it for the whole family to get the knowledge and then have a support system?
Oh my God, my favorite question. Yes, I'm actually going to the NAMI conference. Are you familiar with NAMI?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So probably a lot of people are, they do amazing work, and they have started a conference, and I'm speaking there in just a couple of weeks on this particular topic about why mental health education, also known as mental health literacy and psychoeducation, is really important for the family and for the caregivers. And so I have a whole hour talk about that, and I just love the topic so much. What we see in research studies that have been done for over half a century is that when these caregivers go in to mental health education programs, they come out of that not just feeling better themselves, because they feel less stressed about what's going on, simply because they understand, like, what is bipolar? Oh, okay. So when Michael goes, you know, says and does X, Y, and Z, that's the bipolar that's coming out, that's not me, and I also know what I can do to support him. And then they also know, oh, it's really important that Michael takes his medication. Like, now I understand that medication adherence much better. And I understand to pay attention to that. And maybe, let's say you're younger and you first figured out about your bipolar and you didn't really realize, you know, the medication, why it's important.
Yeah.
Now your caregivers can go in and support you and say, actually, it's really important, Michael, and here's why, right? And that's so much better than a doctor that tells you that once. A caregiver that can go in and kind of nudge you at the right time with the right types of words that fit for you, that is going to increase your likelihood of actually taking that medication or doing whatever therapeutic steps that you need to do in your journey. Now your symptoms are improving. It has trickle-down effects on the entire family structure. So that's just one example of why this is so important at a family level.
When you're talking, it reminded me, my wife almost every day says, "How have you taken your medicine?"
Yes. Which is not to, you know, medicalize and say that, oh, you're treating the problem just by taking medicine. No, it's
right.
One of the steps in that journey. And just like if you had diabetes or another type of chronic illness, like now you are trying to manage this illness, which is also, for some people, a chronic illness. And so that's just about management, symptom reduction, and increasing well-being for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. So have you seen the stigma of just talking about mental health lessening?
Oh, yes. You're asking me so many questions that feel like they're perfectly planted. So let me go back to that example of the Boston Community Center staff program that we've been running. So at the beginning of that program, which lasted at 11 weeks in total, at the beginning, basically none of the people were interested in receiving treatment in the hypothetical scenario that they were where they were going to have a mental illness. So we asked them in a survey, totally anonymously, if you were to experience a mental health challenge, would you be willing to seek treatment? And 50% said absolutely not or no. And the other 50% said, I'm not sure. After that 11-week program, without having preached about treatment, without having said, oh, you all have to be treated, we had simply just educated them about what mental health is, what mental illness is, what are some effective solutions, all of that stuff. After that program, 100%, except for one person, so 99% of people said, yes, they would absolutely seek treatment. So that's just one example of how that belief and attitude towards mental health and treatment for it totally changed over the course of 11 weeks. And why that is important is because not only is it changing what they would do for themselves, it's also changing what they would advise to the youth. So that when they're talking to the youth that come into the community center and they can see, because now they've learned the early warning signs, right? Now they can see like, oh yeah, that youth, like they're just not doing great right now. What are they going to recommend? Are they going to recommend, oh, just wait it out, like toughen up? Or are they going to say, hey, let's sit down and talk. And also, this might be a really good time to check out whether seeing a therapist is a good idea. You know, it's a totally different route that youth could be taken on. And so that's why that's so meaningful. So we're really seeing how that's changing. And that's not just us. There's so much research demonstrating that these effects do happen, but it's really nice when we can see it as well in our own data.
What has the feedback been about the nonprofit?
Really positive. Some of it is on our website. We also have a Trustpilot review page. People like it. People feel seen. Yeah. People feel heard. You know, oftentimes we end up talking to people about whatever challenges they have had in the past or currently have, because we all have something, whether it's grief, depression, a little bit of anxiety. We didn't realize like how it came out, right? So it's been really positive so far, whether it's been youth or adults, caregivers, staff members, all around. So also very gratifying.
What do you do to help your own mental health?
For me, having routine is really important. So I kind of go to bed and wake up at the same time every day, on the weekends as well. As I mentioned earlier, I have insomnia, and that's something I struggled with through my teens a lot and through my 20s as well. I just simply couldn't sleep. And so I learned various cognitive behavioral strategies and mindfulness strategies to address that, that I also still implement in my daily life. So for example, progressive muscle relaxation and different breathing techniques. So, and then on top of that too, I have a lot of different activities that I do. I am the type of person who gets super excited and passionate about the work that I'm doing, which while that is really great, one of the pitfalls of it is that I can immerse myself into it so much that it takes up my entire life. And that's not healthy in the long run. It's not sustainable. So for me, it's been really important to put some stop blocks in and say, okay, it's 5:30. Now you have to go to this other place and do your activity for the day. So I have these stop blocks inserted into my life on a daily basis to make sure that it doesn't absorb me as much.
How does it feel for you that your work is helping others?
Meaningful. I think the biggest thing is that I see myself so much in the other people that I'm talking to and working with. I mean, the people on my team, the people that we go out and support, whether it's a child or a mother or a staff member, I can relate in so many different ways in all of these different positions. So every time I get so happy that I know that at least there's going to be one less person out there that's going to be struggling as much as I did. At least that's what I hope, right? So it's very meaningful. It's very motivating. I think that's also the answer you probably get from a lot of people when you ask about this. It's very reinforcing whenever you're seeing, oh, this is helping others. Like, it makes you want to do this work more. Yeah.
Where do you want to see your mission, say, in the next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, I would love to see our programs being an essential part of community centers all over the U.S. So we're really focusing right now on the New England area, with Boston and New Haven being key areas. We are happy to come anywhere. We have team members all over the U.S. because we have so many people that are ready to volunteer themselves and support it. So definitely a substantial amount of funding to put that in that can support our efforts across community centers and underserved communities and communities that are not necessarily underserved but would like to have that support as well. We're starting to expand in the more western parts of the U.S. starting from 2025. So it would be happy to chat with anybody that's in those regions, but definitely expansion. I really think the community centers is just such an overlooked and area that has so many opportunities that are just not really discussed in the scheme of things.
No, and they make a huge impact in kids' lives.
Yeah. Like, you know, there are a lot of kids that don't like going to school, but they like going to the community center, right? So, that's maybe where they'll have a more effective impact. And what I also love about the community centers is that they're in the community. Chances are that the community center staff know their parents a little bit or see them on the street, like they know what's going on, right? And so a big part of our entire mission at Mind Blossom is also to build community, really build those social ties. And this sounds old-fashioned, but I kind of want to get back to that time where we're all waving at each other on the street because we all know each other, right? Because we all feel safe and we all feel like, you know, yeah, why don't we sit down and have a cup of tea or coffee with that person? So that's also a long-term goal that we are hoping is going to be kind of an indirect consequence of the work we're doing.
So how can people reach out and learn more?
You can definitely go to our website, www.mindblossom.org, O-R-G. That would be a good place to just find more information about, you know, what is mental health education? Who am I? Who is the team? Why are we doing what we're doing? And you can also see about our services. We are constantly updating the website with all of the different projects we're doing. So it's a good place to be. Sign up for our newsletter. Now, we're also, I'm thankful that we have some sassy marketing people that like doing marketing stuff. So while you don't always see me representing Mind Blossom, you will see various team members that are on live streams and Instagram conversations and all of that stuff where they're also talking about mental health in some capacity. So that's also a good place. And then lastly, most of the work that we've been doing that has been for free or has been virtual is all on YouTube. So our name is just Mind Blossom. You can find us there as well.
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time and thank you for what you're doing and helping others. I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder when I was 37. So I always think, like, if I knew this information when I was younger, what would my life have been like? So,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. That is such, you know, that is one of the mega frustrating things. There are studies showing that on average, parents will wait anywhere between 1 to 8 years, depending on the study, before they seek help for their child's mental health symptoms. And that is a very concerning statistics, because we know that the earlier we get support, the better. And it's easy to end up in a situation like yourself, where you're 37, and you probably have had your symptoms and signs of this for at least a decade, if not more. And you know, why didn't people catch it? And there's so many reasons why. This is not to blame or, you know, put fingers on anybody. It's just to say that we can do better. And so why don't we try to do better? Especially because this is so cheap. This is not necessarily an expensive thing to do. You know, we don't have to build fancy hospitals and things like that. This is not cancer treatment. You know, we're literally just building prevention programs and empowering already hired staff members with this information. So it's not like we're reinventing the wheel here. We're just expanding knowledge and broadening it and bringing it out to the people where it really matters a lot.